This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been exactly 2 years and one day since the first case of COVID-19 was reported in Illinois. Here's Dr. Allison Arwady, the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, announcing the news on January 24th, 2020.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Allison Arwady. I'm the commissioner at the Chicago Department of Public Health. This morning, the CDC announced confirmation of the second case of novel coronavirus in the U.S. and the first in Illinois. I will tell you some more about the patient in a minute, but I want to start by stating clearly that this is a single travel-associated case, not a local emergency. We obviously take emerging viruses very seriously, and there are still many unanswered questions about this novel virus. But I can reassure you that even with this Chicago case, the health risk to the general public from novel coronavirus remains low at this time, both nationally and in Chicago. Chicago has been building its public health preparedness systems for years, and we have a solid response plan in place. There is no need for the general public to change their behavior in any way based on this news.
No need for the general public to change their behavior in any way. How far we have traveled in 2 years. Here in Illinois, there have been 33,803 confirmed and probable deaths from COVID-19. And we're not only mourning the loss of parents and spouses and friends, but also the loss of our routines, of time spent in the company of friends and strangers, and even something as simple as not having to talk to people through a mask. Despite the challenges, there have been some bright spots, too. We have vaccines that are more effective and available more quickly than initial predictions. We also have more treatments for COVID-19 coming online. And people have shown resilience in adjusting their way of life. And yet there's still so much uncertainty. It seems that with every new hope comes a new challenge. Vaccines, then variants. When will this pandemic really end? When will we get back to normal? And what would normal even look like anyway? We don't have answers to those questions. And for many of us, that uncertainty can take a toll on our mental health, which has already taken hits from the onset of the pandemic. That uncertainty can also lead to a lot of anxiety. And that's what we'll be talking about for the rest of our program today. We're joined now by Dr. Anand Kumar, head of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He also served as medical staff fellow in the Laboratory of Neurosciences at the National Institute on Aging. Dr. Kumar's research focuses on late-life depression and mental disorders of the elderly. Dr. Kumar, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Listeners, we do want to hear from you if you have a question about mental health during the pandemic, particularly amid the uncertainty of the Omicron variant. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. Or maybe you have some strategies for how you've preserved your mental health these last 2 years. Please do share. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Kumar, can you just begin by talking about the link between, as I alluded to earlier, the link between uncertainty and anxiety?
Sure. Let me take a step back.
Sure.
And give a little bit of an introduction to what you said, which is what you said was very accurate. This fits the model of what we might call chronic stress, meaning stress is often conceptualized as, something negative, something bad happens to someone, and all your biological and psychological systems go into high gear, and over a matter of hours, days, weeks, months, the stress decreases, or the external factor that causes stress goes away and we adjust. That's typically how one conceptualizes stress. Here, this has been going on now for approximately 2 years. If we are to believe the early reports that came out of China, like in November of 2019, we're talking about approximately 26, 27 months. And everything around us has changed. Our way of, as you pointed out in your introduction, our way of speaking, we speak through masks, our way of socializing, we don't go to restaurants or movie theaters. If we do, it's wearing masks again. Everything around our way of working, commuting, everything has changed. And such fundamental change over such an extended period of time is bound to have consequences. psychological consequences and biological consequences. And at some point, it's difficult to distinguish between the two. So what are some of the psychological consequences of COVID? Now, I'm not talking about individuals who suffered from COVID. That's a different category, and we can go there if you like after a while. It's how is society adjusting? How are we coping? It's highly variable, depending on where one is and what do you do, whether you're a student, whether you work, whether you're a physician, whether you're in the IT industry, it makes a big difference. But overall, what we've noticed, and from multiple reports, anxiety has increased in the general population. Depressive symptoms have increased in the general population. There's a sense of frustration that's set in. And I don't want to use the word hopelessness, but that probably applies only to a small group of individuals. But there's a sense of that we have lost control, and that this COVID is unrelenting and will go on indefinitely. Experts use words like pandemic, and back to pandemic. It's very unclear. If you're not in the immediate field of epidemiology, or I might say even if you are an epidemiologist, these terms mean different things. But our way of functioning, our way of interacting, our way of life, quote unquote, has changed over the last 2 years. And with no certainty that it'll improve over the next few days, next few weeks, or the next few months. It might not. And these are the factors I think the body's physiological system and our psychological system have been moved up a notch and unfortunately remains on high alert, if I may use the term, for an extended period of time.
And yeah, high alert.
That's a long-winded answer to your question.
No, it's a great setup, and we need to take a break on our program, but I think that's a great setup for the rest of our conversation, which we are going to continue after a short break for the rest of the hour today. We're speaking with Dr. Anand Kumar, who is with the University of Illinois Chicago, psychiatrist there. Stay with us, 800-222-9455 if you want to join. More to come after a short break. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about COVID-19 and mental health. It's been 2 years and one day since the first identification of the SARS-CoV-2 virus in Illinois, the first case of COVID-19, although we now know in retrospect that there was probably already spread happening in Chicago at that point, but testing and diagnosis were such that that's the one we knew about. 2 years later, we've traveled a long way. We've lived with restrictions, with masking. Our social interactions have changed a lot for many of us. Our work life has changed. Many of us, that means more isolation, working from home. Others, it means the stress of having to work in public in the midst of a pandemic every day. We're speaking about what toll the anxiety and uncertainty, particularly the uncertainty of the last 2 years, have taken on our mental health. We're talking about that with Dr. Anand Kumar, the head of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Illinois at Chicago. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. So, Dr. Kumar, you did a great job, I think, of laying out this idea of chronic stress. Maybe a lot of us, more people than are probably used to dealing with sort of acute stress, where they have, you know, a bad day at work, maybe even some trouble with a family member or something like that. But 2 years of ongoing anxiety is a little something different than most people are used to dealing with. So what are some strategies to help manage that sort of chronic stress?
Sure. Well, thank you for the question. The strategies will vary depending on the degree of stress, how well you're coping, and what some of your support systems may be. So let me give you an example. In most cases, the anxiety and what I've called depression in the earlier segment is not necessarily disabling or clinically severe, meaning it's a matter of degree. You can have a milder form of anxiety or milder forms of depression, which do bother you and which reduce productivity and psychological well-being, but not to a great degree. That's probably the majority of individuals who are experiencing in one form or another the pandemic. What does one do? There are different strategies. For example, one can watch less television, less news programs. And the reason I say that is news programs, I mean, there's a range, but there are so many good ones. But even the good ones, the objective ones, focus a lot on COVID and both the pros and cons, mostly cons. And repeating the message of gloom and doom, perhaps inadvertently, takes its toll after a while, especially television. There are visuals, there's audio, and one might get the impression that this is a hopeless situation. So reducing that time, and I'm not saying not watching television, I'm just saying reduce the time you watch news programs. They might increase anxiety level.
I will just interject briefly to say guilty. As we are talking about COVID on the radio today.
Sure. You know, some amount of discussion and news dissemination is important. Without radio, television, even the print media, where would we be, to be honest? We would know new developments so much as what is going on in the world. But it's a matter of degree, and it's a matter of moderation. The second, some quiet time for yourself. Do whatever helps you relax. With reading, listening to music, watching a movie, etc. Some more of that. The other would be, if you're into relaxation techniques, having small groups of colleagues or friends who feel similarly and want to sort of not exactly have a happy hour, the traditional sense of the word, but discussions on broader things that help you relax and help you get your mind off COVID and talk about coping strategies, covering for one another, etc. All these are steps that will be helpful to you. Each of these interventions, if I may call them that, may not be applicable to everybody, but they're broadly helpful and could help reduce the anxiety and the stress level. What about beyond that? When does one need to seek professional help if needed? That's the next step. And I'm not saying that is for everybody, but if everyday common sense maneuvers that we just outlined are not helpful, then you reach, you know, a higher degree, I guess, of stress and depression and anxiety, where some more targeted intervention might be required. Let me stop there for the moment.
Sure. Well, let me ask you about that then. And I think, yeah, obviously, if people are experiencing sort of acute or which is the term you said, clinical depression, right? It's more severe depression where they would need treatment. I think there's, you know, sort of a well-established, but I think a lot of people out there maybe feel like, oh, everybody's going through it. You know, I should just buck up. What is your pitch to people who think maybe addressing mental health is not as important as addressing their physical health or just getting through the day, right? Just getting the kids dressed and out the door to school and make sure they wear their masks if you're fortunate enough to be able to send them to school, or maybe your school's closed and that brings a whole new level of stress.
Sure. So the first question, physical health versus mental health. It's difficult to draw clear lines, clear boundaries between the two. I know we frequently do that, but at some point it's the human body. The brain, the mind, the rest of the body, these are all highly, not just interconnected systems, it's one entity. So at some point, stress takes its physical toll. Well, what does that mean? It can, for example, affect sleep. It can affect appetite. You may wake up in the morning after what you think is a night's sleep and not feel refreshed. It could affect your behavior at home. The children, spouses, other family members, it could affect behavior at work. So the brain, the mind, and the rest of the body are in many ways inseparable. That said, if you're coping all right, if you're doing fine, and if people around you, family and friends, feel you're coping fine as well, perhaps you don't need to change a whole lot. You adapt, obviously, telecommuting, working from home, et cetera, wearing masks more often than not. And if that's not a bother, if you feel it's a minor inconvenience, you're doing well. That's great. More power to you. But if everything is not going as well as they were before the pandemic, if various aspects of your personal life and professional life are beginning to show signs of stress, fatigue, overload, whichever term you use, then you might want to seek some help. And much of it could be self-help. Again, it could be less television, more learning relaxation techniques. Many of these are available from, you know, online, et cetera. Go for the reliable ones, eat healthy, try to get some exercise in. But the role of exercise, even if it's a small amount of exercise every day, and talking to friends, talking to family members you're comfortable with, forming sort of a mini networks, if you will, social networks of support, can be tremendously helpful. You don't necessarily need a professional in the mental health field to help you with some of those. You might, but you might be able to do this yourself very successfully and do okay. Once again, if it's not bothering you or bothering you minimally, but you're adapting, you're adjusting, you know, more power to you. Keep doing whatever you're doing. But if you think it's beginning to take its toll, some of the things you just outlined might be helpful.
We've heard a lot about children and mental health during this pandemic, being out of school, being back in school with masks, you know, home alone with mom and dad who are busy on Zoom or worried about mom and dad going into work in the middle of the pandemic. And I wonder, what is your perspective on kids and mental health and COVID-19? How worried should we be that, and I suppose it's going to make a mark on this generation, regardless of what, you know, interventions we as parents might try to do, but, you know, what should we be thinking about with in terms of children?
It's extremely important to think about our children in the context of COVID and mental health and psychological issues that may come up. They are not immune in some way from the changes that impact adults and the more elderly. But the approach is going to be different. I would recommend that parents, and I guess schools and school teachers, et cetera, be as, you know, open with children as possible without getting into jargon, without throwing a lot of data around, though I guess older children, high school children, may be more comfortable with data and information from the CDC, et cetera, than younger children. But nonetheless, simplify without jargonizing. I'm not sure jargonizing is a real word, but there it is. I've used it. And explain to them what it means, what the infection means, what a pandemic might mean. Again, simple language, simple terms, which they will understand. And what are some of the coping steps might be. In the case of children, I would start again with the medical issues. Vaccines, if they are in the age group that they can receive vaccines, and many are today, about the need for masks, about the need to be extremely careful in school settings or in social settings, and how all those maneuvers can greatly reduce the risk. I would also then ask the children, they might tell you spontaneously how it's impacting them. Are they sleeping well? Are they tired? Are they frightened? Are they concerned about tomorrow? And, you know, address these questions. Again, it should be done more than once, and home and school, as opposed to either or. And I think those are good steps in allowing children to talk about some of their concerns, to talk about some of their anxieties, if you will, fears about what may happen. I think that's a very good place to start.
Only about 3 minutes left in our conversation. I do want to ask you, we are in the middle of winter. It's very cold in most of Illinois right now. And the January can be a really tough month for people, right? Cold weather, slush on the road. There was one of our producers found a UK company that identified the third Monday in January as Blue Monday, right? Because it's long enough post the many people get a holiday break. It's still a lot of winter ahead of you. I wonder what you think of that and how the winter blues intersect with, you know, this chronic stress we've been talking about from the pandemic.
Sure. So let me use a term to explain some of this. It's called cumulative stress, meaning one thing upon another. And that's what the winter blues, that's what staying indoors does. It adds one more dimension to the load society carries, or to the load all of us carry as members of society. Now, good thing about winter, we're now at the end of January, it will change in a few weeks. COVID may come and go over the next several months, but it will be spring. So there's, you know, room for optimism as well. But speaking directly to your point, it complicates life. It adds one more dimension to worry about. And for a very small subgroup, it may be the last straw, meaning the stress factor that moves them from, oh, I'm coping well to, well, some days are a challenge. And I think one should look at the cumulative impact of COVID, winter, and other things. And the same kind of approach. I wouldn't necessarily suggest going to a tropical island for 3 months. That's not necessarily an option for most of us. But recognizing that winter will pass and things over springtime will definitely look better. Can I make a final point?
You may, please.
So what we're doing at the University of Illinois, what the hospital leadership is doing here, we have something in place called wellness rounds. So different teams from psychiatry, hospital leadership, nursing, et cetera, we round two or three times a week to talk to our doctors, our residents, our trainees, the nurses, laboratory staff, dietary, et cetera, those who work very, very hard and who are exposed to patients in one form or another around the clock. And what we do there again is, you know, brief conversations to make them feel respected, let them know that their work is very important, and ask them how we can be of help to them. These are not, you know, complicated maneuvers, but it's the human element. It's touching base. It's sort of forming a sense of community, a family within the hospital system. And I think similar approaches could be taken in other work settings, whether you're working in the school districts, or you're working in an information technology setting, or you're working in a research lab. Ultimately, it's the community that's impacted, and all of us are part of the community. So watching out for colleagues, watching out for our students, watching out for elders, I think is a human aspect. We are all capable of being supportive, and this should bring out the best in us.
Dr. Anand Kumar is the head of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Dr. Kumar, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skolark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Before we go, I want to encourage you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. There you can find our past segments, and you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can hear conversations like the one we broadcast yesterday, in which I interviewed Rick Steves about travel during a pandemic. I got to say, Rick Steves seems like someone who is coping quite well with the mental health stress of the pandemic, and he's done so in part by traveling to Europe. You can hear about that in our conversation through our podcast, which you can find also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find your podcasts. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.